In memory of Billy, Billy's mum Holly and dad Marcus are listeners and patrons of Time to Talk TFMR.
This podcast is supported by ARC, Antenatal Results and Choices. ARC is the only UK nationwide charity offering non-directive, individualised information and support to parents who are making decisions around antenatal screening and diagnostic testing. They also provide specialised bereavement care for those who experience termination for medical reasons. For more information or support, please call ARC on 0207 713 7486.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. I'm Hayley, and in this episode, we're going to be talking about religion and TFMR with Chelsea. Chelsea grew up in a Catholic household, her father a deacon in the church. Chelsea lost her second child, Percy, to T13, which is Patau syndrome, and had a TFMR in 2018. It changed her entire perspective on her religion, and she's here to talk about her difficulties in understanding where it fits now in her life. Welcome, Chelsea. It's really lovely to have you here.
Hi, I'm excited to be here too. A little nervous, but I'm excited.
Yeah, good. Well, we'll hopefully put those nerves to rest as we get going. Why don't we sort of start with your understanding of your religion as you were sort of growing up? Maybe that's maybe a good place to start.
Yeah. So like you had said, I was raised Catholic. I mean, I was baptized Catholic. Both my parents are Catholic and were raised also in that religion. So it's a very deep rooted, I guess, faith for us. And most of my childhood, it just kind of was what it was. We went to church every Sunday. We participated in Sunday school and church events and things like that. But it wasn't something that like necessarily guided every decision that we made. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as time went on, my parents actually got deeper in their faith as they've gotten older. My dad didn't become a deacon until 2017. That's when he kind of entered into that. And so, especially in the time since then, they've, like I said, have gone even more and further into their faith. And when I, you know, got out of high school and graduated and kind of moved out on my own, I still attended mass fairly regularly, you know, but it was one of those things where it was like, if I didn't go, you know, kind of was what it was. And that continued, you know, so we got married in the church, and he's not Catholic. But we had agreed to kind of raise our kids Catholic. So we did baptize all of our kids. But in the probably 4 years more, because we did have two miscarriages before Percy. And so even starting with those, I just started to kind of lose, you know, my kind of steadfastness in it, you know, it became a painful thing.
Mm.
So.
To go to mass, to go to church.
Yeah. I think because, you know, a lot of the readings, I mean, we're taught in the Catholic Church that suffering is inevitable. Like you will suffer, you know, and it's just a part of life. And so it's not like I was raised to think like nothing bad could ever happen to you if you just, you know, believed, I guess. Mm. But I saw good things happening around me, you know? And so I just thought if I just had faith and believed that everything would be okay, that it would. Not that I was guaranteed it, but that if I just had enough faith or prayed enough, that everything would be okay. And it started to not be okay.
Yeah. Did that result in, I guess what I'm hearing there is this kind of feeling of why are my prayers not being heard, or why are they not enough? Or am I not enough?
Yeah. I mean, I think because we all see that. We all see that on social media where people will kind of call out for prayers or call out for praying, you know, like I have this going on in my life. Your prayers would be great. And then a lot of times they come back and they, you know, they're like, they worked, like everything's all good. And for me, it stings because why were mine not strong enough? Why were mine not answered? You know, I prayed. I mean, like I said, when we found out we were pregnant with Percy, we had two miscarriages and we found out about him on Easter Sunday, 2018 is when we found out. And to me, it felt like a sign, like everything's going to be okay. You know, this is a time of hope. and a time of kind of renewed life.
Fertility, it's all that.
Yeah. And so I was like, this is, you know, we had to have those other losses. You know, I was trying to find meaning in it too. Like we had to have those other losses because we were supposed to have him. Right. Mm-hmm. And so then when we found out, you know, we discovered all of his anomalies were discovered. It just felt like getting kicked in the teeth. You know, the floor just came out from underneath us, and it was just like, it was all for nothing. I mean, it just felt like, yeah, like the thing that I had prayed so desperately for didn't matter.
It sounds like a deep betrayal.
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially. Yeah. And yeah, like why, like, again, why were my prayers not strong enough or not worth being answered, you know?
Yeah. Sounds really painful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see why then entering back into church and being surrounded by that would be really hard.
Yeah. And part of it too, I mean, you know, Catholics are kind of, and it's not as much of a belief anymore, but you know, I think in a lot of religions, you're kind of taught to just have as many kids as you can have, or just, you know, be fruitful, I guess, you know, and just, and that was never our plan, you know. I mean, you do live in the real world, and you
yeah,
know.
Yeah. They cost money, and
yeah,
you know,
time. And... Like, yeah, exactly. And so I had no plans of having 10 kids. Like that was never the plan anyways. But the amount of people that I would go to church, and as our oldest son is getting older, they're like, man, he needs a sibling. You got to keep going. Like, and they didn't know. It's not like I'm announcing to all these people everything that we'd been through. But by the time Percy had died, our son was almost 3. And by that point, people are like,
hurry up. Pressure.
Like, yeah. He's getting older, you know, like at a certain age, he expires at being a sibling. I mean, you know, I don't. And so that was hard. You do. You have people that are just like, it should be easy. You know, you did it once. Just do it again.
Like, yeah. And again, there's that sense of, oh, there's something wrong with me then, because I'm not doing it in the way that's expected.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, there was a lot of that too. And I had a lot of disappointment in myself and in my body of like, I know I can do this. Why can I not just do it again?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it just became hurtful and painful and just a lot, you know, like hear that over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things where I know people think they're being well-meaning, but it doesn't feel that way. It feels invasive.
Yeah.
No, which I, you know, I've heard from other, you know, it's not a unique feeling to me. So.
Yeah. And I wonder, it's not necessarily a unique feeling to being a part of a church community either. You know, we can have those intrusive questions from complete strangers. I remember being asked while on holiday, we had just arrived, you know, from the airport, and we were being picked up. We were in the taxi, and the woman who was driving the taxi saw our son. And at that time he was, I don't know, 5, something like 5, maybe. And she was looking at him and going, right, so where's, are you going to have more? You need to have more. You know, like, you don't know me. You don't know us. You don't know our situation. You know, so people make all sorts of assumptions and judgments. It's kind of embedded in our society. And let's face it, I mean, our societies have been also shaped by religious ideas, and whether you're in Western world or Eastern world, you know, they help build our societies, don't they?
Yeah.
So I think there'll be a lot of resonance with what you've just said of those sorts of intrusive questions and assumptions and feelings around those. So I'm wondering where you're, you know, so you're sort of building this picture for us of where you kind of came from. It's just a part of your growing up. Your identity was with the church. And then we can see how it's being impacted. And where is your sort of view lying now?
So at this point, I find myself in this in-between. And this is where I think I've struggled even finding a place that I fit, because I've noticed in the years, you know, since we went through our TFMR, I've noticed that people are usually in two camps. Either they lose their faith completely, or it strengthens it like way more than it was. And I find myself somewhere in the middle, because a part of me has to believe that he's in a place like heaven, because I have to believe he's in a place far more magical than here, or far more, you know, if he's not with me and there's supposed to be a better place out there, it has to be wonderful, right? But in that, again, I mean, like, people say that he's in a better place. Okay, but what better place is there than in my arms? What better place is there than growing up with his siblings? Like, because there are things I see with my two living kids here that make me feel like there has to be some kind of connection that he is still here and with us. But again, I have a hard time believing in a God that allows babies to die, that allows any of the bad things to happen, you know, that do. And so it's, I don't know. It feels like a lonely place, a lost place. And like I said, it's been hard to find a community where I do fit. And in that regard, so.
Yeah, it's that, you know, with religion, there's a lot of this feeling of, this is my interpretation, that it gives us a map. It's like it gives us this rules for life. And then when life doesn't go according to plan, it really kind of throws the compass right off. Where do you go from here? Yeah. And I mean, what it's making me think about is, you know, going back to when you found out about Percy and his diagnosis and the decisions you were being faced with, did you use the church at that point to help you with this or not? And if you did, was it useful? I mean, how did that work for you?
I did, in a way of like community, I guess, more so. Like, my grandma was a nurse for like 50 years. Mm-hmm. And when Percy got diagnosed, she was working like 3 days a week in a convent as a nurse. And her sister is a nun. And so they like had all the nuns, you know, praying for us, or she rallied the nuns, you know, to pray for us.
I've got a great image there right now. The nuns being right, rallied. Just,
you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, think about anymore, the average age of a nun has got to be like 90 at this point. There aren't a lot of new ones coming up.
Yeah.
Or like my dad started calling, the way when you go through your kind of deaconship, you have like a class with people for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys that he'd gone through it with was actually in our, like our local church, because we don't live in the same town. And so like he called him and we got in contact with the priest there, and I got in contact with like the priest that I had grown up with that was at my parents' church. I mean, you know, we kind of rallied people. I mean, I have a friend of mine who grew up in a different faith, and she wrote us down and they're like, they're kind of book of prayers, you know? I mean, so in that regard, you know,
yeah,
we kind of had that. And then
was that helpful? Cause just going back to what you were saying about praying for you, and it's
one of the things, at the time I was in so much distress. I was just taking anything.
Okay.
You know, I mean, looking back, like, I'm thankful for it, but I'm also just like, it wasn't going to do anything. You know, like, I'm realistic, you know, like I said, at the time you're in so much distress when you get that news. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And people were offering these things. It's not like I was calling and saying, hey, can you rally the nuns? Like, hey, can you, these were things that people were coming to us with. And I was just like, you know,
yeah, taking it. But it sounds like that's more pre-decision to me.
Yeah.
That's like, the shit's happened. This has happened. And I don't, like, I'm in pure terror right now, and I don't know what to do. And so people offer prayer. They offer, condolences at that stage. Was that fair to say? Is that a good interpretation of what was happening at that point?
Well, yeah. So I think they were kind of praying for healing, you know, this was before this is post news, but pre-induction, you know?
Yeah.
As far as like after he was born, I mean, I wanted a funeral. You know, we had a service in the church. Like, I still wanted those things, because again, like, in the back of my mind growing up, I was, you know, this is how you did it, you know, and
these were the rituals.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we talked about, you know, I went, my husband and I went through a lot of heartache of trying to decide like what, you know, do we cremate him or do we bury him? And the Catholic Church believes that you bury your dead. And so that's what we did, you know? And it's like, looking back, I mean, he's buried in our hometown, which is about 2.5 hours away from us. And it's like, I wanted him cremated so I could have him, so he could be in our home, you know? And again, it's not something I regret by any means, you know? We make a point of going and we see him and we, you know, I mean, there's beauty in both options, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
And we found the beauty in this part of it, but it's one of those things of like, if I hadn't had the beliefs of the church in the back of my mind, what would I have just chosen for myself or for, you know, for our family?
Yeah.
So little details like that. I mean,
was it acceptable for you to have, so were people open for you having a funeral in the church for Percy? You didn't receive any kind of objection to that because of you went through termination and we mostly view Catholicism as against that. I know that that's not entirely true. Mm-hmm. There are Catholic groups that are pro-choice, but for the most part, most people think Catholic, abortion, termination, they don't go together.
Well, I think a couple things influenced that. I think my parents hid it. I think it was fairly hidden. And because I was induced, I think people still don't see it as what it is, you know? So I think there's that. I think we were in a situation where he was going to die no matter what. Mm. I mean, our diagnosis was not gray.
Yeah.
And I mean, like after the anatomy scan, I mean, the doctor told us they were surprised he was still alive.
Yeah.
At that point, because it was so severe. And so I think that's also something that people cling, like other people cling to. And I know people close to me cling to, is that he was going to die. Like, I mean, we made a decision, you know, I mean, for lack of a better term, we did, you know, we could have saw what happened. I mean, the doctor told us he could have died in a week. They said we could have made it full term. I mean, they didn't know. So that was still a decision that we made to induce at that point. But I know, I mean, I've had arguments with people that I'm like, hey, we were able to do what we did because of abortion laws. And people are like, yeah, but it's not the same. And I'm like, but it is. It's a fact. Like, the reason we were able to make those best choices for our family is because of these laws.
Yeah.
You can't pick and choose what you think is okay.
For other people.
Yes, for other people. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you can choose what's right for you,
mm-hmm.
but you can't choose what's right for other people.
Yeah. I mean, there are people like very close to me that don't view what we did as a termination. They just don't. And that's okay. You know, if that's what they need to do to handle it. And as long as they're not trying to push it on me, I'm okay. You know?
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. Mm. You know, I mean, to me, we just had our son, you know, I mean, it wasn't when we thought, and it wasn't the circumstances that we thought, but we just did what was best for us. And I wouldn't change that. You know, it's almost 3.5 years. And I wouldn't go back and change anything that we did, you know, or make a different decision or make a different choice, you know. I mean, I mean, we had less than 2 weeks between when we had our anatomy scan and when he was born. It was about 11 days. And every single one of those 11 days, I didn't eat. I didn't sleep. I got put on anxiety medication because I just couldn't, and I couldn't do that for 4 more months.
Mm. Yeah, you made a decision based on what was best for Percy, for you, for your family, for your living son.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing that other people don't realize as well. I had to think about, I had to think about my son who saw my belly growing and was like, baby. I mean, he knew something was different. And I mean, he's almost 6 now, and he talks about him on a regular basis. Mm. I mean, Percy is a very prominent figure in our home, you know, and in our life. And I talk about him because I don't want my kids to be afraid to talk about him. Mm. It's not something to be shameful of or ashamed of.
No. He's your son. He's their sibling. He matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to have some kind of faith that he's okay, you know, mm-hmm. that he's, you know, sent up there with me and all my grandparents or other family members, and that he's okay, and that we're okay, and that he just watches us or takes care of us in ways that, you know, I may never know. So I have to have some kind of faith in that, I guess. I guess I focus more on the faith of things anymore than the religion part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't, again, I was taught growing up that like, you have to go to church, you have to do these things in order to get to heaven or get to wherever. And I just don't, but why?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's that thing when you go back to, but I did all the things I was supposed to do. And it didn't work out for me. I have experienced such depth of loss and pain and hurt. And what do I do with that? Mm-hmm. Because it's just not good enough to say, oh yeah, you're going to suffer in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Because my suffering is different. You know, losing a child or losing a baby, going through something like that is different than someone who's suffering because they, I don't even know. I mean, there's no way to compare. You can't compare.
No. But it's not about comparing, is it? I think everybody would agree that the loss of a baby, a loss of a child, is one of the most painful things that you can go through. It's one of the most shaking of yourself. And, you know, whether a part of your identity is with religion or other parts, whatever those things that make up you, the you is completely rocked to the core. You question, I know I did. I questioned everything about what I believed this world to be. It just did not feel safe at all anymore. Yeah. And I'm somebody who's had, both my parents have died. I've had several miscarriages as well. It was the loss of Luna that shook me to my core. Everything was up for debate as far as, is this right or safe or even worth anything? And that's a pretty scary place to be in. And I'm wondering about your kind of, so what tends to happen is we sort of start to build back, and it's what I'm hearing is that you kind of go, okay, well, I'm the religion part of it, the rules for life, I'm kind of less attached to this, but it's the faith parts that I've held on to in that.
Yeah. And I guess it's mostly faith in things that involve him. I mean, like, I feel like I have this broad faith that everything's going to always be okay. I don't, I'm a very skeptical person. I mean, I always have been, you know. It's not like I was like this bubbly positive person and then this happened and now I'm, the glass is always empty. You know, I've always been a little anxiety filled and skeptical, you know, about things. This just like gave me more of a reason to be, I guess.
Confirmed. Yeah.
Like I had reason to be skeptical this whole time. Look what happened. And, and I see myself doing it with people. I mean, like someone will announce something on Facebook and I'm like, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You don't know, you know, I mean, and I do that too. I do hang on to things until I know for sure, you know, I mean, we did get pregnant again, 7 months after Percy died. And there was a part of me that didn't want to tell anybody ever. I just wanted to just, until I knew. And we did testing. We made it through ultrasound. Everything was fine. And even at that point I was like, but you don't know, you know, you don't, stuff can happen. Stuff can happen now. I mean, even
we're powerless.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, you can't live in fear. Like, I know that, like, you can't live just thinking something bad is always going to happen, but I rather be pleasantly surprised than disappointed. Essentially, I rather think the worst and have something good come than think, oh, it has to be okay, and then be sorely disappointed.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not the best way to live. I don't know.
But I think it's really honest, because I think that that's, especially in really any kind of form of baby loss or pregnancy loss, but I think with TFMR especially, I think that will resonate with a lot of people, that, you know, you kind of go, well, I'm just going to hang on to my, I'm going to keep my hope in check. I'm going to keep my hope in check. And that's a coping mechanism to try and mitigate the crushingness of the potential loss, because we know what it does. And it's a trying to protect ourselves from that. Whether it actually works in reality, I don't know. But I mean, for coming from the religious perspective, you kind of would have, the hope would have maybe been put the trust in God, you know, or put my faith that he will make sure it's all right. And you said this at the beginning, that, but then he didn't. So I can't, how does that square up?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, and that, cause that's what I did. I mean, that's exactly what I did. I was like, you know, I'm going to put my trust and my faith in this, cause this is what I've been told to do. And so that's what I did. And it didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't happen. And so now I just don't, I put my faith in what I do know, you know, what I can hold on to, you know, and if in the end I find out otherwise, I will be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
I think that's called hedging your bets.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. How is this, where you're at with your, let's call it your faith. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so where you're at with your faith now, and I heard you say that that's really connected to Percy. So this is about you maintaining connection with Percy. How is that with your family, specifically with your parents? I mean, you know, your father's a deacon in the church. You've said that as they have gotten older, their religious faith has become stronger and yours has become a different type. I'm not going to say not stronger, but it's just maybe it's moved in a different direction. How does that work as an extended family for you?
So, I mean, there are a couple of things that help. I'm one of four. I have three brothers, and we're all at varying stages of our religion too. So it's not like I'm some black sheep, you know, who does, you know, I'm like the, you know, shun the non-believer. Like I'm not, I'm not in that position, thankfully. Like I said, because me and my brothers are all at different levels as well in what we believe. You know, whether my parents like that or not, you know, I don't know. But so a lot of times I just avoid it. I mean, like my mom will call me on Sundays and be like, did you go to church? And I'll be like, no. And she's like, why not? You know, you need to just go. And I'm like, I don't get anything out of it. Mm-hmm. Why do I need to just go? What is the point of just going if it's not actively helping me? Mm-hmm. You know, she's like, well, just keep going. And I'm like, it's been 3.5 years and we've gone in spurts during that time. We've gone months without going. And, you know, and part of that when COVID happened and churches were shut down, it made it a lot easier to not go. And so that added to it. But even since then, I mean, it's been well over a year since at least our church has been back. And I just, why? Like, why do I have to go to church to feel close in my faith either? Cause that feels very, it feels very performative to just go, you know, I mean, people can go to church and be terrible in the rest of their life. And that doesn't make them a good person just because they go to church, you know, and you have people that are wonderful people who have faith, but don't attend any kind of formal religion. And they're wonderful people. Like going to church or being a part of religion or attending, you know, whatever your means is, it's not by default make you better than anybody else or make you guarantee you getting into whatever is beyond this life, you know. Like I don't know. I don't feel the need to atone for, you know, our decision. I don't feel a need to ask God for like thankfulness for, or for forgiveness. You know, I don't feel the need to ask God for forgiveness for our TFMR because I don't feel wrong about it.
Yeah.
I don't. And I think that's hard for people. I think people in religion expect you to feel bad for things that go against your religion. And I don't, because I did it. We did it for us. We made the best decision for us. I don't make my decisions based on what the church believes. You know?
Yeah. Do you feel that that's your mother's or your parents' feelings? Do you feel that they are, is that what they're asking you to do by saying go to church, that they're wanting you to atone?
And they've never said anything like that directly, but they've expressed concern for my soul, right. For my heart and for my, all of that. And I know it comes from a good place. And so I don't condemn them for that, or for having those feelings. And again, it's not like it's a big argument in a fight where they're like, go or else. I mean, I am an adult, and they can't force me to do anything. But I mean, sometimes I just have to say, I'm not going to talk about this.
Yeah.
I've had to do that. I've had to just be like, I'm not going to talk about this, and they accept that, they don't push it. They don't try to force me to. And they deal with it in their own ways. And if they don't see it the same way or call it the same thing, then those are their terms and that's okay. And again, as long as they're not trying to force me into a corner or a box that I don't feel like I should be in, then that's okay too.
Yeah. I think this is the thing about, and it's something that our world is right now, for the number of years, it's all this sort of polarization of I'm right and you're wrong. And I think what you're sort of demonstrating here is that actually, we can hold different beliefs and we can still love each other.
Yes. I think that's what a lot of people could, it would help for them to remember. It's like you don't have to have done what, or you don't even have to, I've said many times that someone who is in our exact position, like our exact same family setup, same diagnosis, if they made a different decision than us, I don't think any differently, because that's their choice. In a different life, I might have made a different decision. I don't know. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people need to remember when it comes to the abortion debate or the termination debate of any kind, is that you are still free to do whatever you want. If it's your situation and your family, that's your choice. And screaming at somebody that they're going to go to hell because they don't believe the same as you, or they want to do the same as you, it's not helping anybody.
Yeah.
Especially them, especially someone who's gone through it. Like telling me that I'm going to go to hell because I killed my baby or I murdered my son or whatever, like that doesn't help anybody, especially me, especially my family. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate to not have many, conversations like that, or many, comments like that.
I'm going to put it out there that even one comment like that is.
Yeah. One is enough. One is too many.
Yeah. I've never had a comment like that. I'm just going to say, I've never had anybody say that to me. And it was something that I was really afraid of, especially in the first two and a half years afterwards. For it to even happen once is too many. Yeah. So it should never happen. And I'm sorry that it happened for you.
Yeah. Well, and like that, I'm very thankful that those comments have been very limited. Less than one hand's worth, thankfully. But I don't like any kind of adversity, I guess, to it.
It's just inappropriate. This is your son. Yeah. This is Percy. This is your family. This is your hurt. This is your grief. Mm-hmm. And nobody has the right to be so incredibly cruel.
Yeah, exactly. Especially someone, yeah, just nobody. It's unnecessary and hurtful. Yeah. And I guess to me, even more so from people who are very religious, because again, we're taught, like, if, you know, if you're a Christian religion, you know, and your religion is based off of the Bible, you know, all those verses that even I think the general public knows about treating people the way you want to be treated or loving everybody, you know, that goes directly against that.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, okay, you say you're this religion or you're, you know, but yet you're screaming, you're saying such hurtful things. Yeah.
You're screaming hate and rage.
Yeah. And to me, that goes against every religion, you know,
it's dehumanizing.
Yeah. I mean, so that's my biggest, issue with religion of any kind, or the people in general who try to preach religion, but then turn around and are just hateful. Or they use their religion as a crutch for their hate.
Absolutely. It's not even necessarily about God anymore. You know, I think you look at all the major religions and or spiritualities, it's usually based in a sort of loving God. And then human beings can get a hold of it and
murky it up
and use it as a way of kind of enacting this kind of one-upmanship thing. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, and I don't think like all people that are religious are like that. You know,
no, of course
not.
I don't
think that by any means.
Yeah, but that's why I made the point that actually Catholicism, there are groups, Catholic groups out there that are also pro-choice.
Yes.
So this doesn't have to be polarized.
Yeah.
So it comes back to the human. It comes back to the person rather than necessarily the religion all the time.
Yes.
About who's interpreting rather than the core of the religion that's being spoken about. I kind of wanted to go back to Percy for a little bit and maybe just give you the opportunity to talk a little bit more about how you remember him, how he is a part of your family still, now, forever.
Yeah. This is where you're going to get me. It's one of those things, and I think we all feel this way. If I could change everything, I would, but a part of me wouldn't, you know, like I wouldn't wish for any other baby, you know? I mean, like, what if we hadn't got pregnant that month? What if we hadn't lost the previous miscarriage? I mean, you know, like so many things could have been different.
Yeah.
So like I said, we found out about him on Easter. So it felt very hopeful, felt very, like this is it, it's going to happen. And looking back, there were things in the beginning that I wish I'd been wary of. He had, an extremely fast heart rate. You know, when they did that first ultrasound, like 8 weeks, and his heartbeat was very fast, like 240. And they're like, oh, it's okay, it'll slow down. You know, I didn't think anything about it. He was very far behind in growth. Like I was like almost 2 weeks behind where he should have been, but they're like, okay, but he's growing. So again, you know, or, you know, we'll check back in a week. He grew that right amount. So things just kind of carried on. I mean, I didn't have another ultrasound until the anatomy scan at 20 weeks, but yeah. So the way our doctor's office does it is they have someone who does the scan and then the doctor comes in no matter what, every time, you know, they come in and even if they're like, okay, everything looks good. So there's, you know, our scan technician, she left and she's like, I'm going to get the doctor. And I was like, okay. So that wasn't like a red flag for me. So the doctor comes in it felt different, you know, like I said, we'd had our son before. So I knew with him, they came in and they're like, everything looks good. Any questions? Okay. Bye. Send you on your way.
Yeah.
And he came in and he sat down and he's like, okay, we got to talk about some things. And I'm like, and I mean, you just start like there's so many things.
Yeah.
And you know, he's like this fluid. Well, first of all, we weren't going to find out the gender. And So anyway, so he comes in and he's like, your baby has fluid on their brain. And I'm thinking like a little bit of fluid, you know, they put shunts in. Again, my brain is thinking how.
Solve the problem.
Solve the problem. And he's like, no, it's like mostly fluid. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. And I start pacing. I just start pacing around the room. And he needed a couple other things. I mean, you know, your mind just kind of goes into shutdown mode and you don't, at least for me, like there were so many things I didn't hear. Like I just.
Yeah, that's trauma.
And the doctor's. Yeah. And so, like I said, the key things I remember were, like, we don't know how your baby is still alive and he's not going to live. Mm. I mean, that was essentially, and at that point he asked if we wanted to know the gender and we said yes, so we could pick a name, you know, because we wanted to be able to call him a name as soon as possible. And this is the funny part. This is one of those things looking back. I knew it was a boy. I knew he was a boy, like from the beginning. And my husband was like, no, it's a girl, because we'd already had a son. And so he was like, it's gonna be a girl. And so the doctor's like, it's a boy. And I turn to my husband and I say, I told you so. In all of this trauma and pain, and he's crying, and I am just in shock. And I turn to him and I say, I told you so. Cause you know, I gotta get those jabs in where you know, when I'm right. and it's crazy because I had been so anxious and nervous up to this point because of the miscarriages. Like, again, and I don't know if it was an intuition thing or if it was purely because of the miscarriages, but like, it didn't feel like everything was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Like the entire time, you know, or that something, mm-hmm. It's like, I couldn't accept that things were progressing normally, you know? And so there was a part of me that, I mean, I was shocked, but it almost felt reassuring that maybe I knew something, you know, in a way. But yeah, our appointment was like one of the last ones of the day. So thankfully when we left, there was no one else like in the waiting room. And, you know, I just asked my doctor, I was like, well, what happens now? And he explained to me that I, you know, would have to give birth. Like at that, you know, I was at a point where we live, surgical termination is not an option. Birth is the option, which is fine. I personally think I would have chosen that either way for us. But that's the option that was presented to us. And then we were referred to a maternal fetal medicine office, the closest of which was about 2 hours away. Mm-hmm. And they got us in within a couple days and we went over there. And my parents actually came with us. And at that scan, that's a more detailed scan, they went through, they said they go through them like a loaf of bread, like slice by slice, essentially.
Right.
And they found, I mean, it was like 10 different anomalies. Mm-hmm. And they asked if we wanted an amnion, and we said no, because at that point, like, it wasn't going to make or break our decision. You know, they suspected it was chromosomal because he had so many things that were wrong. And that day we booked our appointment for the, like, a week later. Mm. And, the day before his appointment, we went in and got some recordings, you know, like of his heartbeat and stuff. And they prescribed me the medication and then we had him the next day. And it's one of those things where it was one of the worst days of my life, but there were little, and then this is again where my faith comes in. There were little mercies, you know, there were little pockets, you know, it's hard to admit this as a mom, but I was scared to see him. You know,
I was scared to see Luna.
You know, I mean, he had a bilateral cleft lip and no nasal bone. And they said his eyes were underdeveloped, but then, and I tried not to Google things because the internet's scary. But I had Googled other babies with his condition and I was scared. I was so scared.
Yeah.
And so when he was born, they handed him to my dad because I wanted him to be baptized. Again, like, these are things that do stem from my faith and from my religion. You know, our oldest was baptized. And so I wanted to keep things as consistent as I could, you know.
You wanted him to have the same things that your other child has had.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So he went straight to my dad, and my dad baptized him. And then my husband took him, my husband brought him over to me, and I saw him. And one of the funny things too, so the first thing I did when I looked at him is I said, he has no nose, because he doesn't. It's just, he doesn't have a nasal bone. And my mom had already seen him, and she comes running over and she's like, he doesn't have a nose. Like, she hadn't even noticed. she hadn't even noticed that he hadn't had a nose. And I think that too also speaks to like the beauty in traumatic situations, you know? But yeah. And so like I said, the fact that my dad was there and able to baptize him, I had a friend of mine who had offered to take photos for us, and she kept getting delayed coming. And then she got there 10 minutes before he was born. I mean, like, we didn't know she was going to make it at all. And so some of the best photos that we have, some of those personal photos we have, we wouldn't have if she hadn't, you know, came screaming in, you know, 10 minutes before he was born. You know, one of my brothers brought our son over, you know, and so they were able to meet. And I mean, it's hard for people too to understand when you have when one day is both one of the best and worst days of your life. You know, I mean, it was terrible and it was traumatic, and it will affect me forever, but it's also the day I met one of my children, and that's not his fault. Situation was terrible, but he's not.
No.
You know,
he's your son.
I mean, he didn't choose to have any of that wrong with him. He didn't choose to not be here, you know? And yeah, that's what I mean too by, like, I wouldn't not have him. Like, I wouldn't go back and wish that. I mean, I wish things were different, but it's so.
But they're not.
Yeah,
they're not. So we take what we have, and we go, well, I still have my child, and it's not the way I wanted. It's not the path I wanted, but it's the path I'm on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is the complicated struggle. How do you honor Percy now?
So I'm big into photography. And so photos are very important to me. So I wanted to have, they're very limited. The amount that I will have of him in our life are very limited. And I have all of them. I have all the photos that I will ever have of him. And so I printed tons, you know. He's around our house. I mean, just like I do of my other kids, you know. I want him to be as represented as possible and as equally as possible, you know? So we have lots of photos. We have a wind chime that my friend gave us, because we called him our rainbow baby, and we still do. I mean, like, our baby we've had since him, we don't think of her like a rainbow. Percy was our rainbow because he came after the miscarriages. And so she bought us this wind chime. And so it's Percy's rainbow wind chime. And so, like, we have that. And I have a necklace that has all three of them around it. And then we do little things on the dates. So like on his birthday, I pay for a cake for a kid around the age that he would be. Around his due date, which is in December, we donate blankets to the maternal fetal medicine office for other babies, other families like him. I mean, no matter what decision they make, just if they've received a diagnosis of any kind. And so we donate blankets, because that was the thing for us, is he was so little. I wanted a really fluffy blanket to hold him in so he didn't feel so small. And so we donate really fluffy blankets. And we just talk about him. Yeah. You know, people ask how many kids I have. I say three, because, and again, I gauge the room too. You know, if it's just a quick one-off thing, like, how many kids you have? Three. Okay. You know?
Yeah. See you later. Bye.
Yeah. Cool. Whatever.
Nobody questions, especially if they see you with two or something, or one. Yeah, of them. Yeah. They just assume the other two are off somewhere else.
Yeah. Or whatever. Yeah. And so, like I said, I kind of gauge the room, you know, if I know I don't want to get into a deep conversation with someone, I'm just like, oh, I got two, and I'll say, I'll have two here, you know. And they don't hear the here part. They don't think of the here part, but it makes me feel like I'm not leaving him out, because I do have two here, you know?
Yep.
And so little things like that, you know, but I think just talking about it, I mean, it's, and I know I'm always interested if other people experience the same, but like my oldest, especially as he's gotten older, like he asks about dying and he asks about death, or, you know, he's a lot closer connection to death than a lot of people, especially at that age. And so he's like, when am I going to die? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, I mean, it's just like, hopefully not anytime soon.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of roll it off, you know. But it's one of those things too. He started school this year, and, you know, obviously it's not normal to have a sibling that has died, you know, at five and a half, you know, whatever years old, you know, he's told me like, yeah, I tell people I have a brother, but I don't talk about it because they don't understand. You know, I get that because grownups don't understand, you know, so there's a part of me that aches for them because I don't know what that's like either. You know, I don't know what it's like to have a sibling die, you know, but the fact that he does see him as a brother, you know, Percy is his brother. It's not some thought or just some like
abstract idea.
Entity. And so, and I think that's the biggest thing I can do. And I'm a huge advocate for telling kids, at least little by little, because to me, I feel like it'd be more devastating if like he got to be 10 years old and we were like, hey, you had this brother that died. To me, that feels like, how would that feel to him? Mm-hmm. How would I feel? You know, or if my mom came to me tomorrow and said, hey, you had this sibling that we went through this with. And so to me, if it's, you know, it just, he's just a part of our life. It's not a big deal. It's not something that should be hidden or
shameful.
Yeah. Or trivial of any kind. It just is what it is. And so I think keeping him as present as possible in our lives helps with that in little ways, you know?
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't want him to be stuck on some pedestal either, you know? Or like my husband and I will, you know, sometimes we do joke. Yeah, our favorite kid is Percy because we put him in one place and he never moves. Like he's my best listener. He just stays there. I mean, you know, like, and I'll say that even to other people and they look at me like, oh my God, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, this is my trauma. I can talk about it however I want. Like,
that's what we call the dark humor of this whole experience. And it's real and it's what helps us. In those times, as you said, it's by trauma. I'm allowed to make jokes about this. Nobody else is allowed to say anything.
No.
Absolutely not. But I am allowed to say whatever I like about this, really, because it's mine and they're mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And our son started to pick up on that a little bit. You know, he's like, I can't be as good as Percy. And I'm like, oh, well, you got your own, you know, you have your own pluses. Like, you got your own.
I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, just keeping him a part of our family because he is, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, Chelsea, you've been so open. It's been, I just want to thank you so much for sharing everything that you've shared. There's one last thing that we do called the TFMR Takeaways, and it's a question. So what advice or piece of hope would you give to women or families who are either facing a TFMR or who have undergone a TFMR?
I think the biggest thing I've learned, and I think it circles back to some of the stuff I've talked about today, but no one else matters, period. Mm-hmm. No one else's opinion, no one else's advice, no one else's thought on your baby, your situation matters.
Yeah.
You know, except for you and, you know, your partner, like no one's opinion matters as much as yours and theirs, you know, like it just doesn't. And I think that's what can get kind of fuzzy, I guess, is when you start taking in what everyone else is saying and you stop kind of doing what you know is best for your kind of core family, you know, or you.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are doing this alone and no one else's opinion matters.
Yeah.
So, and I wish that's what I cling to. You
know? Yeah.
I don't really care. Like, I just don't.
No, well, we're the ones that've got to live it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's got to be what's right for you. Yeah. Thank you, Chelsea. You've been an amazing guest. And I hope I've sort of soothed your nerves as we went along.
Yeah.
I think you got going. So it's been great to have you on. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Oh, of course. Thank you for having me. I could talk about him every day, every second of every day, and it would never be enough, you know? So
yeah.
And anybody, I will talk to anyone who will listen.
Thank you for listening. Let us know what you thought by messaging us over on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR and Twitter at Talk TFMR. Don't forget, you can also subscribe. Subscribing means you can get all of our new episodes as soon as they're released, and you can also find us in most podcasting platforms. That's all for this time. Thank you, and please take gentle care of yourselves.